Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. From the Arts Desk, the Paramount Theater in Anderson has two groups on May 9th. Flynnville Train is a well-known group with local roots, and Blessed Union of Souls has a number of hits. Muncie Civic Theater has The Color Purple April 17th through May 2nd, and Marion Civic Theater has Hallelujah Girls through Sunday. Coming up, The Facing Project returns to Muncie, an event April 23rd to talk about depression and the uplifting story of the people behind a community outreach. But first, time for an update on a story we told you about a couple of weeks ago. This is about the Delaware County robotics team you got to meet, the folks from Fixed Gears, Team 1720. These are high school students working with adult mentors to build special-purpose robots that then compete against other teams to perform specialized tasks. Each year, the challenge is different. This year, they have to build machines that can be operated remotely in a large arena, stacking up storage totes and recycling containers. You can see some of this on YouTube, and we'll have a video on the television Indiana Weekend on WIPB coming up. You met them 2 weeks ago. Now the Delaware County team is headed toward the World Robotics Championships next Thursday in St. Louis. But for now, imagine these young folks, who, by the way, built these industrial-sized, self-powered robots themselves, in a frenetic contest on the floor of a packed high school gymnasium in Indianapolis. It's a noisy place, and we're talking with 17-year-old Jeremiah Bennett, their team captain.
My job, personally, is the operator. So there are two, the main drive team, there are two people. There's a driver and operator. Driver's job is to drive the robot. He maneuvers it around. He's in control of their wheels. I'm in control of everything else. I take care of moving the arms up and down, running the wheels back and forth, extending the scissor lift out and in, collecting everything. Anything that's not positioning the robot, I take care of. So it takes a lot of communication. You have to know the person really well, know how to talk to them, because it gets confusing in there. You have other team members shouting what to do. So you gotta tell them, okay, move over here, I'm gonna run the wheels, we're gonna suck this one in, then we're gonna get that one, pick this up, set it down. It takes a lot of communication. You have to be really in line with each other.
Tell me how you got started in all this.
I was in eighth grade when a friend invited me. He was a junior or senior at the time. He brought me in, he showed me around. I loved it. Just the being able to work with tools, like kind of the freedom of it, just being able to build whatever you need during the off season, being able to explore different interests that I had and stuff. It was an environment that I'd never had before. And so going off of that, starting the build season, going through all that, I started out working on the robot, you know, freshman year, drilling holes, just basic stuff, progressed to now my junior year here, and I was tasked with building the intake wheels for it. I had to make sure that the angles were right on the wheels, you know, major components of the robot I can point to and say, yeah, I made this part here. Just being able to see the progression and like just even the work on the robot. Not to mention like now being on the drive team and stuff. Like that's a pretty, not so much a status symbol, but it's definitely one of those things that you aim for as you progress through this system and stuff. And so being like the operator now for this year has just been a huge honor, and I've loved doing it. It's been so cool just being like a major part of the team in that aspect, you know, not only working on it, but then being able to drive it and being able to operate it and just the fruits of your labor, you know? It's been awesome.
What's it like doing that? If you were explaining, somebody would say, hey, what's that like? How hard is it? What would you compare it to?
It's really, there's almost nothing I can compare it to. I mean, the closest would be a sport, but that doesn't even compare to it. There's, I guess you train for a sport, and this, you learn how to use the tools. You learn, you know, mechanical abilities. You learn like what works and what doesn't. But then with each new year, not knowing exactly what you're going to be doing, different games each year, totally different robot builds. You know, you have to build your robot to do totally different things. You can't prepare for that. So just having the basic tools and then being thrown into having, you know, an objective that you have to obtain, It's hectic, yes, at times, but you have great mentors who know what they're doing, who, you know, are coaching you. They could do it all themselves, but they teach you to do it, and so that you have that self-proficiency in it. It gives you, you know, that sense that you can do this if you needed to. It gives you the tools that you need later on in life, and it's just a great opportunity. They give us the tools, and then each year give us a different objective to use those tools in.
It sounds like it helps you in dealing with pressure.
Oh yeah, very much. This, like I said, being flexible is a huge thing here. So dealing with pressure, dealing with things that, you know, aren't meant to happen. Like I said, just out on that field, we had that knockover. We had to just boom, 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 get it up and get those points down, even if it wasn't what we intended to. So having this atmosphere, it teaches you to, you know, deal with the pressure. If it's too hot in the kitchen, get out. So it's a lot like that. You have to be calm about everything. You have to be okay with things changing on the fly. I mean, we've had robots in years past where we designed it to do this one thing. We get to competition, finds out it sucks at that, and that no one's doing that, that it has no use. We have to change our robot overnight in order to fit with the criteria. Having that mentality has given me a lot of tools in life, you know, pressure things, you know, explaining things. It's helped a lot in many areas.
My name is Michael Cook, and I'm the lead mentor for Team 1720, have been for about 10 years.
This is so impressive to see what these young people can do.
We start in the spring, we do regular training with them, and the way we train is we have a mentor do something. For instance, I'll go on the lathe and I'll turn a part, and a student or two will watch. Then we will trade places. The student will be running the lathe, making the part, and I'll be watching them and guiding them, correcting them, being careful about safety first of all. That's the most important thing. But then they're going to get the part, and I'll watch them until I feel like they are competent and safe on that machine. After that, we will be giving them a printout, a blueprint of a part, and say, go make this. And they'll go over there, those girls you talked to last week, they just go in and they make the parts. Once in a while they have a question, they know enough to ask questions, and when they get stuck, and then we just go over and give them a little guidance, and then they're off again.
Michael Cook says the students grow in several ways.
People come in and they don't really know which way to turn a screwdriver, how to hold it, and they go out and they're working on these big machines, a mill, a lathe, table saws, those kind of things, working on those safely. That's one side. The other side is they're working in a team, and in this team you have to interact. You have to express your opinion. You have to convince somebody of your ideas. So all those personal skills, where a lot of times you'll have we have a lot of students there at that age, they're a little bit backward socially. They come in and they start doing all this interaction. You know, they starts their brain going, and if you can engage their brain without getting their emotion too much concerned about it, all of a sudden they start developing. And they learn to talk to other people, they learn to share their ideas, they learn to convince without having to win, but actually going for the ending up with the best practice, the best ideas. That's the way the robots developed.
That's Michael Cook, lead mentor for the Delaware County Robotics team, Fixed Gears. Before him, the 17-year-old team captain, Jeremiah Bennett. As we said, they're headed toward St. Louis for the World Championships on Thursday. You can look them up on Facebook as Team 1720 and also find their blog that way. It turns out they're looking for support, and you can drop me a note if you need more information. Just ahead, Kelsey Timmerman's latest project and what he and some Ball State students have going on this week in Muncie.
She sits in the top of a greenhouse tree.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Millions of people suffer from depression every year, but many suffer without help or support. Now some Ball State students are working to shed light on the condition and put a human face on the statistics. They're partnering with an organization called The Facing Project, which was started by Kelsey Timmerman of Muncie. You might remember him for his books, which include Where Am I Wearing? A Global Tour of the Countries That Make Our Clothes. This is a somewhat different effort.
The Facing Project is a community storytelling project that connects people through stories to strengthen communities. And it does that by recruiting writers in the community and matching them with individuals facing a certain topic. Then the writers meet with that individual face-to-face, and they get to know their story well enough that they can write the story as if they are them. So the writer writes the story in the first person. Then a book is published, and usually some type of community event is held, like community monologue readings. And we faced topics so far. The very first project was here in Muncie. It was facing poverty. We faced homelessness and hunger and autism, disabilities and drug addiction and sexual violence on college campuses. And so far we have about 22 projects around the country, and we just are getting ready to start our first international project in Costa Rica.
And you've been working again in Muncie with regard to depression, right?
Yeah, that's right. So a Ball State class led by Dr. Adam Cuban is facing depression. So we met with them early last semester, and they kind of decided on what kind of topic they would want to face. And then the students, the Englehart Scholar students, have been, the first semester they kind of worked to like learn about the issue. And then this past semester, they lead the project and recruit storytellers and get the stories produced. And now the book's off to the printer, and the event's going to be on April 23rd at 7 p.m. at Muncie Civic Theater.
It sounds as if the idea is, because these are topics around which there's a lot of data, does this kind of put us in touch with the human face of the issue?
Yeah, so I think that we need to start with stories. So often we start with politics, we start with ideology, and they really can divide us. And really kind of the way the Facing Project started kind of came about because of this. There was an article in the newspaper in the Star Press about poverty in Muncie and how many people live in poverty. If you count Ball State students, it's like 40%. If you don't count them, it's only 25%. And at the time, I was volunteering with Teamwork for Quality Living, which is a group that works with individuals who live in poverty in Muncie. And I thought, this is ridiculous. The most important poverty statistic is one. Do you know one single person who lives in poverty? So often we have these debates around topics that we get red in the face and we get so flustered about, and we come at it with our politics and ideology, and we don't know a single person that's impacted by the issue. So that's kind of where the Facing Project was born.
What did you learn when you first started this? You tackled poverty, and you were working with Teamwork for Quality Living.
Well, you know, I actually thought the first project was just going to be a one-off thing that I was going to do for an organization that I worked with. So, you know, I'm a writer. I've written a couple books, and I wanted other people to have this experience of carrying the responsibility to share, carry the responsibility of someone's story and then to share it in an impactful way that makes a difference and builds community. And then one of the writers in that first project was a guy named J.R. Jameson, who's a Ball State grad, and he's been at Indiana Campus Compact, which works in service learning, and he's been there for about 10 years. And he was one of the writers, and he said, like, this is bigger than Muncie. Let's develop a model, let's share it with other communities, and let's get this going. So I guess what I learned personally was that how great it is getting other people involved and getting other people sharing stories and carrying those stories and communities to share and carry those stories, how powerful that was, how strong those community connections could become by getting other people involved. The average project involves 50 to 100 people.
Well, you're a writer, so you could actually be writing about these topics, but we get more out of it by the involvement of other people, I think is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm really kind of trying to work myself out of a job. You know, for the last decade, I've traveled around the world. I've met garment workers in Bangladesh. I've met slaves in Ivory Coast, and I meet them, and they share their stories with me to share with other people. And that's what I've really, really been honored to do. And for me, that's been such a transformative experience. If you can't meet a slave in the cocoa fields of Ivory Coast and not be changed by that experience. So one of our goals was to get other people engaged in their own community, meeting people that maybe they want to interact with in their typical lives, and to sit down with them and have conversations around topics that, you know, such as depression, that we normally just don't sit and talk about all the time.
Kelsey Timmerman, creator of The Facing Project, which focuses attention on issues facing communities by helping tell the stories of people who are affected. He's working with Ball State students and Professor Adam Cuban on a new project on depression. The public gets the chance to hear some of the first-person stories of hope at a community event on Thursday at 7 p.m. at Muncie Civic Theater. Finally, you may have heard us talking recently on Indiana Public Radio about our membership drive. We know you've heard from us, but I wanted you to hear from some folks on the other side of the microphone, IPR members with a message to deliver. Here are some of the folks we've talked with recently.
My name's Peggy Sanova, and I listen to Indiana Public Radio because it really does give me a window to the world. Now, sometimes I don't enjoy all of those worldwide news programs, but they make me listen because I'm not going to turn off of IPR, so I learn more almost by default than I would if I weren't listening to IPR.
Does IPR feel local to you?
Definitely. When the news comes on every hour, it feels like my next door neighbors tell me what's going on in Delaware County and the surrounding areas.
You know some of these people, don't you?
Why, yes. It's really fun to hear your own friends and acquaintances mentioned and the stories that they tell about them. Yes, very much so.
So public radio news is a little different than what we hear otherwise.
Oh, definitely. It gets you in depth and lets you understand that maybe someone you thought might have been an enemy or someone that wouldn't be someone you'd want to talk to on the street really has a life and a story, and you can understand a little bit more the differences in all of us and that we need to accept them.
Some people feel sort of a sense of ownership of their local public station.
Oh, every time they say Hagerstown at the end of the stations, I feel a pride that I know where that tower is, and I know the farmer that let them put that tower on his land, and I drive by and I say, there's our IPR.
Any advice for the folks who are listening to the membership drive today? Anything you want them to do?
I would like for them to pledge so that we can keep IPR local and alive and well.
Thank you, Peggy.
You're welcome.
My name is Michael Holmes. As chair of the Department of Journalism at Ball State, I appreciate news from all the different platforms and in all of its formats. But I find that public radio provides the news that best fits into my day. I wake up every morning to the voice of Stan Sollers and to the National Public Radio morning show. And I feel that even that brief half hour or so in the morning gives me a sense of what's going on in the world. And I go into the day feeling informed.
Do you think that public radio's value to us has changed at all with developments in the way news is presented in more recent years?
We do get news in so many different ways now. We often learn of breaking news through social media, through electronic channels, online. A lot of that is sort of snacking or grazing. It's a quick hit for a particular piece of information, something that catches our eye. What I like about public radio is that it's more enveloping. I may be doing something else while I listen to public radio, but I am immersed in either the music or the talk or the news that I'm hearing from public radio at the same time.
Thank you very much, Professor Holmes.
And thank you, John.
I'm Alena McKenzie, and I think everybody should support Indiana Public Radio because when you tune in to, say, Morning Musicali, all you get a good tuning for the day. You get calm, composure. You get intelligence.
Do you like Stephen?
I love Stephen.
Come on. No, you can tell the truth.
Stephen is super cool, and it's always a pleasure to be listening to him. He is such a professional that approaches his programming very seriously. He has very interesting guests every once in a while, so it's part of it is music, part of it is talking with interesting guests.
Did there come a time where you went from being a listener to a member?
I think that happened during one of the fun drives when I volunteered.
See, so the pledge drives do work.
The pledge drives do work. I volunteered. Actually, I signed up to be in the studio to take the calls from the callers in, and I was just one of the, you know, people from the street. Basically, I came in and I was listening to all the people pledging, and you know, we had this little scoreboard where we're trying to reach certain goal, and I got so into it. I'm like, we gotta make that number. And I just was like, okay, here it is. I'm pitching in to make that number. And that was it. So it's part of excitement.
Tell the listeners now. Ask them to call and join.
Definitely call and join. There are people on the other side who you will make very happy by calling in and pledging that dollar amount that you have in mind. And you definitely, it will be for all common good. So support your public radio.
Thanks, Elena.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Marv Wiseman. And there are several reasons that I really tune in to Indiana Public Radio, not the least of which that it's just informative and comprehensive. That doesn't really cover it. It's wide and deep. You just get a whole lot of information. if you're a morning person and you're working away, there is nothing like just to have Steve Turpin's Deep and Wide. We're back again to Deep and Wide, but that library of his in classical music, it runs the whole range from early music to classical, to the romanticist. And then he'll have on a music director or a conductor that he interviews. So there are all kinds of reasons to be listening to Indiana Public Radio.
Any words of advice for those who might be listening to this membership drive?
Well, I would tell you, make sure that you are a month-to-month contributor. That's how I do it. That's the way I can afford to do it. And do it that way. It makes it real easy to do. I do it from my credit card. And for those of you who have matching grants, giving even a small amount over the year, your company can jump in and help as well.
Thank you so much, Marv. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Lisa Dykoff, and I listen to Indiana Public Radio because I have an insatiable need to know, and I drive a lot. So I spend that time listening to IPR, and I can hear about things across the world in my local community, things that I care about and things that I want to know more about.
What do you like about IPR?
Well, I love the people. I've known a lot of them now for quite some time, and it just feels like a family, and I'm glad to be a part of that.
Have you ever had one of those driveway moments where you're listening to something, you get home, and you don't want to turn off the car because you want to hear the end of the story?
Oh, absolutely. And we actually do that when we're like going to a movie. Sometimes we're a little bit late getting in because we're listening to a story.
Today, there's television, there's all kinds of media, but radio still works.
Oh, absolutely. Now, it's not just that I drive, but, you know, even in the kitchen when I'm doing cooking and doing housework, even on my iPad, I carried it along with me, like the old transistor radio days, you know. So that's what my iPad now is, now my transistor radio. It's just because it's hands-free and you can do what you need to do and still be using your brain.
Any message for the folks listening to this membership drive? What do you want them to do?
Well, I want them to call in, and I want them to become a member, and a sustaining member would be absolutely wonderful. This is a valuable resource in our community, and we need to support it.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome, John.
Some of our IPR members talking about why they support public radio. If you're not a member, or if you're not sure when you last pitched in, could you join us? Our number is 1-800-646-1812, or you can connect with us very easily online at indianapublicradio.org. As always, thanks for all your support, and thanks for listening to Indiana Weekend.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Doman's Furniture of Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from FlexSteel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.